Welcome to our new show, What Anyone Can Do Podcast, with Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Our new show picks up where our last show, Year of the Peer, left off, highlighting the simple truth that who you surround yourself with matters, and that if we enlist the support of others, give back to those who give to us, and pay it forward for the next generation, we can do anything. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari and I will interview a diverse group of thought leaders who will share stories and insights that will help you succeed in business and in life. How? By doing the things anyone can do, but most of us never will. Today's guest is Kelly Riggs. Kelly is an author, speaker, and business performance coach for executives and companies throughout the U.S. and Canada. He's written two books, One-on-One Management, What Every Great Manager Knows That You Don't, and Quit Whining and Start Selling, a step-by-step guide to a Hall of Fame career in sales. His third book, co-written with his son, Robbie Riggs, is entitled Counter Mentor Leadership: How to Unlock the Potential of a Four-Generation Workplace. Find out more by visiting his website, bizlockerroom.com. That's B-I-Z, lockerroom.com. We welcome Kelly to our show. Kelly Riggs, man, I'm glad that you said yes to coming on the show. Welcome.
Absolutely. Love being here, man. Why wouldn't I? It sounds like it's going to be a great time.
I was first attracted to you when I came across your podcast and True Confession.
Hang on a second. Attracted to me. That may not be what you want to say. Well, I know we're both from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Randy, but you know.
Yeah. Well, it was audio. Okay. Right. So I've got a face for audio as well.
Yes.
No, I was just attracted to, you know, the subject matter was frankly not why I click play. I click play because I'm a dad and now a granddad, and this multi-generational thing and our ability to pay it forward and then also receive it backward, sure, I guess would be one way to look at it. Really attracted me to it. I obviously did not understand what counter mentors meant at first. So let that be your launching point. Explain to our audience what that means and the benefits and of the downsides, if there are.
Yeah, there are some downsides. You know, the reality is we kind of, after our book was published, we kind of rethought the whole idea of counter mentor leadership. It's hard to say. And really, it's counter leadership. And that's kind of what we've migrated to now. The idea of counter mentoring, Randy, came up because my son and I, who's now 31, has his own consulting shop. And he had gotten out of school at the University of Oklahoma, by the way. We're both Oklahoma guys. And he went out into big consulting and really did well. And about three and a half years ago, he and a partner started their own shop. And they've been doing very, very well. And it was interesting because early on, as a college guy, he interned with me. So, you know, I'm being dad. I'm being the mentor. I'm helping him learn these concepts. He grew up in an entrepreneurial household with me anyway. And so he gets out of school and he gets into the workplace and he's, you know, dad, how do I deal with this guy? And how do I handle this boss? And let me tell you some things that are happening. But subtly over time, those conversations started to shift. And we started talking about the, you know, the boomer millennial dynamic and the young kids and the old guys and, you know, the intransigence of people who want to do it their way. And it's the only way to do things and how frustrated he would get by that. You know, one of the stories he shared with me was, you know, he's a 25, 26-year-old kid, and he's been tasked to work with a CIO of a $7 billion company, and he walks in the door and introduces himself, and the guy's probably our age, and he looks at him, and he's like, how old are you? You know, he said, really hacked him off. He said, okay, so I got to grow facial hair, wear some glasses, try to look older. But anyway, you know, the tenor of our conversations changed over time, and I found myself asking his opinions and his ideas, and you know, it just became very natural that I, you know, it wasn't a conscious effort on either of our parts. It was just sort of a natural evolution. And let me tell you why. There are things that these kids know today that our generation don't know and or have been very slow to adopt. And it's really the first time in history that a group of young people come into the workplace and they have something to offer. You know, when I went into the workplace, all I had to offer was a blank slate. I'm ready to work. I've got a lot of drive, initiative. Just teach me. But I didn't have anything to teach the boss. I mean, that would have been silly. But now these kids, they come into the workplace and they know, you know, they know technology, they know social media, they know community, they're collaborative. They can get more done in a couple hours on a smartphone at Starbucks than many of these guys can get done all day sitting in a chair 8 to 5. And so it creates a weird dynamic. They come in with ideas. And remember, these are kids that their ideas have always been valuable. They've always been listened to. We raised them. My son loves to remind me that if there's anything wrong with us, remember who raised us.
Right? Yeah, I get the same thing.
Yeah, you get the same thing. So it's just a dynamic that makes sense to not just mentor, but using kind of a teeter-totter or a lever as a visual, there's a counter-mentoring that's going on. And we kind of came up with this idea one day as we were talking about it and said, hey, you know, we ought to start thinking in that term. So counter-mentor leadership is about being a leader that can exploit the relationship between mentor and mentee, and when it even switches around. There's a counter-mentoring going on, but it takes a certain approach, a certain kind of individual, the willingness to kind of lay that humility or the ego aside and be humble and to say, you know, I don't have to know everything to be a good leader. I can actually be a great leader and a learner at the same time. And it doesn't diminish my role. And frankly, some people struggle with that.
You both are in a client service-based kind of a business, separate mm-hmm. and apart from each other with your particular, you know, specifics that you kind of target after. What are y'all's experiences, yours especially, with your clients and their ability to navigate these kinds of waters with the millennial and even younger sure. people entering their workplace and traditional leadership typically being a little bit more mature?
Randy, it's a great question. I mean, it's all over the board, literally. You've got people who absolutely refuse to even consider the idea that some 24, 25-year-old kid is going to come in here and, you know, show up at noon on Monday and decide they want to run the show and they're asking for their first raise by Friday. You know, that they're just not going to have anything to do with that. And then you've got people that look at it and say, you know what, I'm behind the times. These kids can do more on a computer in 60 minutes than I could do in a week and a half. I can't even figure out my remote control. I'm all over it. I'm in. I just show me how to go about it. But it's deeper than that. And really what I would want your audience to hear is where Robbie and I focus, and we do a lot of work together as well under the counter mentor umbrella, work with a lot of clients together, which is really a unique opportunity for us both and really a unique opportunity for the client because they never get to hear both perspectives at the same time. But it's really about leadership. All issues corporately, all issues are leadership issues. And what I've been telling clients for a dozen years since I started doing this in 2006 is if you have an underperforming team, it's not your team's fault. It's your fault. It's a leadership problem. And so when you internalize that, what you realize is that leadership is not generational. It's relational. So I don't care if you're talking about boomer and X, boomer and Y, boomer and Z, or any combination thereof. It's the capacity to become more effective as a leader that's going to exploit all of the potential of any generation of individual that works for you.
The current state of leadership with, say, your clients and their ability to pass that on, their ability to train the trainer, if you please.
Right.
How would you describe that in the landscape that you're seeing among your clients? Well, their ability to just, we've got this burden. I feel this burden. You know, to me, significance and legacy are the two big drivers for me at this phase of my life.
Sure.
Where at the age of your son, I was probably much like him in that full-blown mountain climbing mode.
Absolutely.
I'm not necessarily in full-blown mountain climbing. You know, now I'm just trying to stay on the mountain. But it's legacy and significance that matter more. And so for me, I'm driven to really want to pass it on. My son, who will turn 38, so we're a bit further along than you and your son, but I want to pass it on not only to him, but even to future leaders in this window that I have. I don't know about you, but I feel like I've never been better. I've never had this much know-how. I've never had this much experience.
Right.
I still have great energy. I'm real comfortable in my skin, but then to pass that on to people that are half your age is a challenge all its own.
It is. And to answer your question, I mean, the big broad section under the bell curve. You know, there's a big bell curve. There's some people who do it really well, and there's some people who don't do it very well at all. I mean, it's just not very good. And let me tell you why. This is my opinion, but we see it acted out in the workplace all the time. The average person that gets promoted because of the results they create, they get things done. So it's knowledge, it's performance, it's skill. You know, you've been around the longest and know the most, people turn to you. Or I was Exhibit A. I was a national salesperson of the year for 2 years in a row. They said, hey, we need a manager, regional guy. We want you to be the guy. Okay. But the problem is getting things done is not the leader's responsibility. The leader's responsibility is to get things done through other people. And there is a dynamic shift in the skill sets that are necessary to do that. I am really good at getting things done, but when they made me a manager, I struggled. I had no idea how to translate that. So what I did is, you know, what most people do when they're trying to create that legacy or pass it down, they replicate what they've seen. But most of what most leaders have seen doesn't work. It's micromanagement. It's tyranny. You know, it's a train wreck. And so they really have never been taught the skills of what effective leadership looks like. I tell you what's amazing to me, Randy, is, I mean, we get a dozen executives in the room and ask them to define leadership. You might get a dozen different definitions. And so you're trying to train someone to do something for which we don't even have commonality in terms of how we perceive it. So we start off by saying, listen, we're going to define leadership in a very specific way. It's the art and science of getting things done through other people. So now we have to learn or develop the skills that will enable us to do that. We're trying to create a culture that engages employees, develops their potential, because what we know is that engaged employees who are using all of their potential, they do better work, they're more productive, they're safer, they have less turnover, they make more money, they're better with customers. When they're not engaged and not using all of their potential, they have more turnover, they're worse with customers, they're less productive. I mean, you know, so, and all of that we know empirically, because there's a ton of research that makes it very clear to us, is all a function of leadership. So people who want to pass on that legacy often struggle because they really don't know what it is that they need to pass on.
What resistance do you find to your definition of leadership?
Almost none. Almost none. In fact, in many cases, people have it's like they settle in and calm down, because it's like, well, I've always heard it's this or that or the other thing. I mean, it's in its simplest form. You talk to John Maxwell or Stephen Covey or Ken Blanchard, they're going to tell you leadership is influence. It's my ability to influence people around me. Influence them to do what? To right. Get things done. We're not talking about thought leadership. We're not talking about charismatic leadership, inspired vision leadership. We're talking about the ability to produce results. I mean, that's why we promote people to management. We need you to get things done. So we're talking about a very specific kind of leadership that will take a team of 4, 6, 8, 10 people and make their results greater than any individual or the sum of the whole. And that takes a very specific set of skills that the vast majority of people never learn.
But isn't this a moving target? Because what you and I had as leaders coming into the workplace, what your son and my son have as leaders coming into the workplace is it looks and feels, I'm assuming, very different. Just by virtue of the fact of, to your point, the technology, the world that younger people have lived in. You know, my son and I were having a technology conversation the other day, and he was a toddler when I was running a company in Oklahoma City, and everything was done by fax, and this wasn't plain paper fax. This was the old thermal stuff that, you know, we filed away.
Okay, hang on, for all the millennial listeners, just Google it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then we realized after we filed this stuff, you know, well, that stuff disappears, you know, so we catch ourselves, we're photocopying thermal paper on the copier, you know, it's
brilliant.
You know, but that's obviously puts us in a completely different headspace than today's 21-year-old who doesn't know life without the internet.
Well, this is going to be counterintuitive, because I know exactly where you're coming from, and I would think that would be a natural thought progression, but actually, really nothing has changed, because leadership principles and what leaders do, I mean, leaders are responsible for strategy and planning. They're responsible for communication that comes down from them and doesn't get made up below them. They're responsible for people development. The grander, higher level principles of leadership have not changed. What has changed is the tools, obviously. But it's really interesting when you think about, we've got all these tools that are supposed to make us better communicators. It hasn't. And you ask anyone, you know, we have the text, all kinds of text messaging. We have all kinds of platforms on social. We have all kinds of email, internet. We got everything in the world. Do we communicate better today than we did 20 years ago? Oh, heck no. Well, no, we don't. So it's not even the technology. It's the principle of what does good communication look like and what do you have to do to make it happen? And the reality is the very best communication happens face-to-face, eyeball to eyeball. That's where we can actually have a real conversation and dialogue. And you'll find that most leaders will tell you, in fact, we talk about it in the book. I call it the four most dangerous words in your vocabulary. If you're a leader, I don't have time. You know, they don't have time to plan. They don't have time to train. They don't have time to communicate because they're so reactive and so busy with the workplace. They never do the things that, well, Covey would call it quadrant two stuff, right? Things that are right, important, but not urgent. It's the business building, people building stuff. And they just don't do those things. So I don't really think that much has changed, and the tools have not made us any better at it, but they can, if we learn the principles and skills first, then we can utilize the tools in certain ways.
What are some of the biggest lessons that your son or younger generations have taught you?
Well, I mean, the first, I think maybe is a little obvious, but it taught me to be humble. You know, when you grow up as, like you said, a hard charger and getting things done and you have some success, you can start reading your own press clippings and you can think, hey, I've been down that track and I've made a lot of mistakes and I know better than you do. And it leads you to sometimes not willing, the unwillingness to listen to people. And that creates a couple of problems. First off, if you've got a younger employee or a less seasoned employee, you create value when you listen to them. And to immediately dismiss any ideas that they may have as, hey, we've done that, doesn't work. You know, this is the way we've always done it, that kind of nonsense. First off, it devalues the employee. Secondly, it assumes that the way I tried it was the only way to try it, and the only way that would have worked, and it didn't work. So I dismiss it as a principle that won't work at all. I'll give you a really good example of that. For years, I owned a sports media production company. And we actually sold radio time for properties that we created to air on the radio. And we'd talk to businesses about sponsoring it. And it wasn't unusual to run into an owner and say, well, I tried radio and it doesn't work. Really? You know, here's my question. How do these radio stations stay in business? Right. Because if businesses aren't supporting them, we have a real problem. And that's a really good illustration. You know, they tried it once. They didn't do it the right way. They had a bad message. Right. You know, they didn't brand it well. They didn't have the right frequency or reach or anything. That concept happens all the time. And so I think the ability to stop and say, my 30-year-old, 28-year-old, 30-year-old, 32-year-old son can teach me things, is a little tough, you know, at first, because you're trying to be dad. At first off, that's me. The dad right. dynamic makes it a little more complex. If I'm just a boss, I think it's a little easier, but it really was an ego thing and learning to be humble.
Big tagline for our show is who you surround yourself with matters.
Yes.
And our fundamental premise here and what we are evangelizing is for all of us, whatever our role in life, to be more intentional about the people that we surround ourselves with. And yes, active listening, to listen to in order to understand, and the value of that diversity. And yet there have been countless research and studies done that show, especially if you take CEO types, if you take real strong business leader types, the alpha yeah. personalities, and put them in a room, they are going to gravitate to the people that mostly they know, which I would speculate, my intuition tells me that's going to be all of us, no matter if we're a CEO or a business owner or anything else.
I agree with that.
What would be some of your thoughts in this counter mentorship progression that you and your son have endured that could help our audience be more intentional in diversifying the people that they surround themselves with, even if those relationships, you know, Kelly, are not particularly formalized like a boss employee relationship,
right?
Just to give us some insights, some perspectives that are so different from our own, especially in today's culture where we are also dug into our positions. Those people that like the president don't like the president,
right?
And all of that. Any words of wisdom and advice?
Yeah, you know, I think so. And I think it's probably pretty straightforward, but it always bears repeating. I think that anyone who thinks they can go it alone is going to struggle. And I was that guy. I have to tell you that I'm going to go out and be the best I can be, and I'm going to blow people away, and, you know, I'll be successful, and I don't need any help. In fact, I've got something to prove. I got a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, a little insecurity, whatever that may be. And so I found myself reinventing the wheel a lot, making a lot of mistakes I never should have made. And I would tell you that it can be a dark, lonely place. I've been in the sales business since I was 20. And I also train and develop salespeople as part of my corporate.
What caused the shift in you?
I figured out at some point in my mid to late 20s that business is not about getting things done. It's about the relationships you develop. And that was not my natural inclination. Business is about people. And until you have the capacity to develop a relationship with people and to thrive together and to actually benefit from the interaction with them, if you're a boss and you don't develop your people, you're going to struggle. If you're an employee and you're not working to make your boss look good and be successful, you're going to struggle. If you're a work coworker and you're not helping the people around you succeed, if you exist in a vacuum and I don't care about anybody else, you're going to struggle. But a lot of people let a lot of things get in the way, and there can be a lot of reasons to get there. But I just figured it out. And so my advice to people is simple. I've done it since I was probably late 30s, early 40s, is I use coaches and I use those informal relationships. I'm always looking for people that can, you know, provide encouragement. They can provide instruction. They can provide, you need a guy who can look you in the eye and say, dude, you know, what you're saying and what you're doing don't match. Okay. So you need to get real with yourself. A really good example is when I started writing my first book, I got to a certain point and I started to struggle with it because I got busy and, you know, I let other things get in the way. I mean, you know this, writing a book is a grind. And so finally I just decided, you know what, I'm going to hire a guy, I'm going to get a coach, and I'm going to let them hold me accountable. And I whipped that book out, right? Because somebody was there encouraging me, listening to the challenges, helping me navigate those things. I think finding people that can help you through the difficulties and be that encouragement and somebody you can celebrate with, Randy, it's really, really important. You know, I tell salespeople all the time, I never needed a sales manager because I had my wife. And then they say, well, okay, well, what's that all about? Because most guys, you know, don't really talk to their wife about business. I go, no, my wife would know the first thing about the thing that I was selling. You know what she found out? She found out, she found out that if you hit the top level of the President's Club, we got a 2-week vacation in Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah, trip.
So every day she's like, why are you still here? We're not going to Hawaii if you're sitting here, you know? So I think that is the best advice ever. And it doesn't, you don't always have to be paying a coach, but sometimes that's the right play as well, to get some money invested in the game and have to be accountable to somebody. I think that's some of the best advice there is.
The premise of our show now, as we have rebranded it, What Anyone Can Do, as I told you before we hit the record, it was taken from a Joe Henderson running coach quote, where I'm paraphrasing, he said that these elite runners, they really are doing what anyone can do, but most people don't. I'm wondering, with especially with the theme of your counter mentorship philosophy and in that work, I'm supposing, as a boomer, that can be a super big hurdle for people to get past. Just to even think that I could learn something, I could surround myself even with younger people. I happen to be blessed in that I foster it, I go out and seek it, and I'm surrounded by a number of 20-somethings and 30-somethings and 40-somethings, but I don't figure that I figure I'm more an outlier probably than most people that are at my stage of boomerism. And I guess my question would be this: for somebody that hasn't stepped out of that comfort zone that you found in your early 20s, wherever they're at in the timeline of life, what are some things that they could do to at least engage that and give themselves some chance to figure out if this might work for them? Kind of taking off from your radio advertising analogy, I mean, just because you try it once and it doesn't pan out doesn't mean that it's a failure.
Right.
You may not have executed it properly. So to help people and to encourage people, to nudge people to be more thoughtful, be more intentional in trying to see, especially whether it's going up the age bracket or down the age bracket, because who knows where the listener is, right in the timeline.
Sure.
I mean, what are some things that they could do, do you think, to give it a go?
Well, I would confess to you that I'm a big fan of the rebrand of the show, and I'm a fan of that quote because I think that's 100% right. You know, so many people think that life has dealt them a set of cards and that's the ones they have to play. And so if you got dealt smart, or if you got dealt some wealth, or if you got dealt, you know, standing or status, that's where you're going to lie. And nothing could be further from the truth. You know, I've always said, when I wrote my sales book, which is called, ironically, it's called Quit
Whining.
Quit Whining. I hesitate to say it. The sales leaders love it. Salespeople don't. Quit whining and start selling. The whole premise was, look, you want to be a great salesperson, it comes down to two things very clearly: drive and discipline. Either you want to be great and you have the discipline to practice and get great, or you don't. And if you don't, you're never going to reach your potential. Angela Duckworth wrote a book called Grit that came out a couple of years ago. She calls it passion and perseverance. She gets paid millions of dollars for that book. I did not. So it's the same idea.
Yeah.
Passion and perseverance is what creates success for people. What I found is that I'm shocked when I train salespeople or executives or leaders of any kind, is how little time they invest getting better at what they do. People don't read today, which all the research says it's one of the very best things for learning and intellectual stimulation and driving creativity and every other thing in the world, but people don't read. Well, I mean, you don't even have to read. You got audio books and TED Talks and every other thing, but people aren't trying to improve themselves and drive themselves to their potential. That is the single biggest stumbling block. You know, I think we've lost the context, Randy, of setting goals. When I was a kid, and you know, when I was in my early 20s, my boss is like, write down what you want to do and where you want to go, and then we're going to create a plan to go exactly there. We're not going to leave it to chance. We're going to create a very specific plan. You ask people today, as I do quite often, how many of you have written down your goals? You've written down exactly how much money you want to make, or how big you want your company to be, or any of those things, and you have a very specific plan to take you there. You might get a handful of arms raised. And yet those same people want to know, okay, what's the secret to being successful? There is no secret. The secret is right in front of you. Create an objective that you want. In sales, it's just math. If you want to sell $1 million, I can tell you exactly how to do it. All I need to know is what your average deal size is, customer size, you know, those kinds of things. I can tell you exactly how many calls you need to make, what your win rate's got to be. It's just math. But people don't take the time to figure out, A, what it takes to be great, and to create a plan to get to greatness. And that is the single biggest stumbling block they have. We live in a hacking, growth hacking, life hacking, sales hacking world. And everybody wants, you know, to go make a YouTube video, go viral, make $1 million. Does it happen? You bet. But you have better odds winning the lottery. I mean, the reality is you can be hyper successful, have the life of your dreams, if you're willing to work for it. And what I see, and the advice I would give is, look, become an expert in your domain. Learn more than anybody else out there. Become valuable intrinsically because you have knowledge and applications and skills that other people don't have, and you will be successful. But you've got to invest in that process.
Well, to your point of your title of Stop Whining and Start Selling, I mean, so oftentimes whining feels good.
Short term,
you know, so we tend to want to be around people that are willing to listen to us whine, or we're willing to listen to them whine. So it kind of perpetuates itself.
Yeah,
it can be a hard treadmill for people to get off of sometimes.
Yeah, my favorite line is to say, you know, salespeople are very predictable. When they don't get a deal, it's because of the economy. When they do get a deal, it's because they're awesome. You know, they're great salespeople.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always somebody else's fault when they lose.
I came from retailing, Kelly, and I can tell you, if sales were down, oh, well, it's the weather. It's the, you know, and in Oklahoma, it was, oh, well, the state fair is going on, the whole thing. OU lost.
Yeah.
The Sooners lost. So nobody's out buying.
Right.
Well, any excuse will do. Kelly Riggs, we appreciate your time. The book is Counter Mentor Leadership, How to Unlock the Potential of the Four-Generation Workplace, co-authored with his son, Robbie. I can't recommend the podcast enough. It is found at countermentors.com. And I'll give you the last shot, Kelly. Any parting words of wisdom?
Yeah. Hey, listen, I appreciate the plug for the podcast. My son and I, like we do in the book, we get a little snarky, a little sarcastic. We actually use hat icons. I've kind of become known for the fedora hat you see me wearing. He wears what he calls a socially conscious, eco-friendly hat. Yeah, it's a baseball hat. Anyway, yeah. And in the book, we make comments about each other, you know, through that. But I would just really tell people, listen, anybody can become a great leader. It really comes down to whether or not you want to learn the skills. Anybody can learn the skills. Now, to be fair, some people will be better leaders than others, but it is a function of your emotional intelligence. There is absolutely no correlation in the research between IQ and success. There is a huge correlation between EQ, emotional intelligence, and your success. The better you are with people, the better you know, the more you learn self-awareness, self-regulation, empathy for others, and you practice those things. Some people do it better naturally. Some people like myself, we have to learn those skills. But I can assure you, you can be a great leader if you want to be. You just got to take the time to learn and practice and even fail through some of those skills and get better and better on a daily basis.
Thanks, Kelly. We appreciate your time.
You bet. Enjoyed it.
To learn more about our show and what we do, to submit questions to us, and to subscribe to What Anyone Can Do podcast, please visit us at whatanyonecando.com. The podcast is hosted by Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Our assistant producer is Katie Rutkin. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod is Vibe Ace, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks for watching or listening. What Anyone Can Do. Please share the podcast. See you next time.